Hello and welcome to another breaking news edition of What Most People Think, and you are joining me live from the sixth floor of the Travelodge in the Portsmouth City Centre, £31 a night. It's outrageous. Again, I slept well. I don't know what it is. I think I'm broken inside. It's like a man that sleeps well in prison. There's something wrong with me. But look, this is a week of big announcements. Some of you, probably a lot of you, will have already heard. There are two big announcements this week. Times Radio, it has been announced now that I'm going to be doing the Friday evening slot, 7 p.m. till 10 p.m. That's going to start on the 7th of February. And also, my stand-up special, Basic Bloke, is now on ITVX. So please, look, I'm 48 years old. This is the first time I've ever had a special go onto a streaming service. So you got to watch it. I know some of you might have already watched it. You might have been to the tour. You know what I mean? If you're a patron, you might see. Just watch it. Stick it on the, you know what, stick it on the laptop. Hit mute, just let it play away in the background and you'll have done me a massive favour. Because I want to get this going, and it was, you know, I'm going to sound a bit kind of BAFTA acceptance speech here, but it was my best work. It was my best work, so I really hope. And also, you know, if you really want Stevenage to get the attention it deserves for being shit, then then watch it. What was it I said in the show? Stevenage, it's got everything you need and nothing you want. There you go, there's one for the tourist board. Going back to the Times Radio thing, yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing for me, because Friday nights for years, that's my gigging night, you know. So the gig will then be now in the studio. So it's good. We're going to be doing a bit of news. But here's a crucial thing from the point of view of the podcast. It's business as usual here. This will still be the place to hear me at my most candid. But of course, there will be certain tonal overlaps. We'll talk a bit about politics in the show on Friday, but it'll be a lot of culture stuff. There'll be TV previews, movie reviews. I'm looking at an item which is about male wellness, sort of, I guess, like Women's Hour, but with jokes. They do jokes too, but you know. So it'll be like an accompaniment. It'll be a complimentary piece to the podcast. And if anything, it might open it up more for me to do more breaking news episodes. I don't know why I suddenly went like Sean Connery there. So yeah, all big stuff happening. But listen, as I say, business as usual with the podcast. And I'm doing a breaking news today because there's just a lot happening. I don't know if it's the pinch point of Trump getting inaugurated, but it feels like people are getting their shit in order. I mean, of course, you know, I'm not a global affairs expert, but there's been the Hamas ceasefire thing. And a lot of people, Trump was claiming credit for it. And it's easy to scoff at that. But equally, you know, it's kind of like, if you look at Biden or Trump, if they were your boss, who would you rather put your request for annual leave in with? And I know some people have said recently, oh, you're climbing up Trump's ass. I'm not. I think he's a bad human being, but I am fascinated by the efficacy of the stuff that he does. But look, we're not talking about Trump today. We're talking about affairs closer to home. We're going to be discussing the surprise U-turn by the government on an inquiry into grooming gangs. Oh, sorry, let's call it an audit. It's like when they did their thing recently. It's not a reset. It's a mission realignment. There's also been another, and this isn't a U-turn either, but Bridget Phillipson has now reactivated the legislation on free speech. So that is another, definitely not a U-turn. And then it's all about ladies today. All about, that sounded so old-fashioned. It's all about the ladies today. We're making a special day for those lovely women in politics. But Kemi Badenoch has done a speech, and frankly, no one gave a fuck. But, you know, it's difficult when you're leading the opposition. Unless she's talking about eating steak from her desk, no one gives a shit. But she gave a speech. I watched it, so you don't have to, and we're going to talk about that. New patrons. Sorry, I keep getting pulled up on this. New patrons, right? We've got... Oh, just a reminder. So the tickets for the Jeff Norcott and Friends gigs, which are... Let's read out the dates, because you can't just buy tickets for these. Hang about. This is so unprofessional. I better not do this on Times Radio, eh? The 29th of January at the Backyard Comedy Club. Go on their website. Support from Jacob Hawley and Tanya Edwards. And then the 20th of February in Leeds. Support from Michelle Shaughnessy and Jason Patterson. So at the moment, on the Patreon site, it's VIPs that have been offered tickets. The promoter is letting me know how many I can offer. Obviously, it starts with VIP. I'll be going back to him shortly to see if there's any more available, and I might be able to offer, you know, a free ticket as we kind of move through it. But I will get back to you on that. We do have new patrons, both VIPs. All right, lads. Richard Stidoff, why do you sound like your mates with Giles Brandreth? I don't know why. Richard Stidoff and his witticisms, right? You know when Giles Brandiff was on the sofa at TVAM, were you doing the equivalent, but like at a lower level on Channel 5, maybe wearing similarly silly jumpers? Welcomes Richard Stiloff to the VIP enclosure, and we got Fraser McLeod. Oh my God, you sound like the Scottish centre-back in Roy of the Rovers. Roy of the... Fuck, is that still a thing? What were they called? Harchester United. Roy of the Rovers. God, that was... I bet there were diversity issues there. But yeah, Fraser McLeod. Ball-winning centre-back. Tough tackling Glaswegian. Anyway, you're very welcome as patrons. Remember, if you want to join the Patreon to get the show early ad-free with bonus content, just Google Patreon and then Google my name or What Most People Think. But of course, every episode of What Most People Think has a thank you and a fuck you. So for this week, it is the thank you goes to the Isle of Wight. I had a very nice gig there last night. That's why I'm in Portsmouth. It was a lot of fun out there. I met a few fans. That sounds like such a wanky thing to acknowledge, but people wanted selfies and stuff. The only issue is getting over there. Now, the ferry, the passenger ferry that goes to Ryde in the Isle of Wight, it is very hard to find where you go, because you get there, you put it in on your sat-nav, you put the postcode of the place in, then you arrive at a place which is a coach park, right? Not a bus depot. Then there's a train station, and then you go, how do I get to the ferry thing? And a guy goes, ask this guy, and he went, you have to go through the train station, then go to the end, then the other side, then you have to speak to a little elf at the bottom of a hill. I was like, what is this fucking Hogwarts? Do I have to run at a platform, and then I'll be on the magic Hogwarts train? But yeah, got to the Isle of Wight, and it was a lot of fun. The fuck you. Right, so we spoke about in this week's main episode about the death of DEI, and a patron got in touch and told me his story, and I thought this was worth sharing. Now, it's not to say, like, the reason I went and sat on the BBC diversity panel is because I do believe in representation. I believe in that companies and organisations should try and accurately, within reason, represent the constituencies, the demographics that they paid to represent. But there's something else that's happened in recent years. So let's talk about John's message. It feels like that old thing that you used to get on Radio 1 or 2. What's the one? You know, the loved one? Our story. This is John's story. So John starts his message. I thought you might appreciate a personal story of DEI madness I encountered back in 2018. I'll keep it brief. I was working in sales for a national company supplying plant machinery. I'd been one of the top two performers on the team of 7 for 3 years. During the height of the company's push on the gender pay gap, I applied for a field sales role, made it to the final two, and gave what the hiring manager later called one of the best interviews he'd ever sat on. I didn't get the job. Instead, they hired a young woman with experience selling ads in a local wedding magazine. The person delivering the news assured me without prompt it wasn't because she was a woman. The hiring manager later called me, somewhat embarrassed, and admitted more roles were coming up and he hadn't been given a mandate for a diverse hire for those. Fast forward 2 months and another field sales role came up. A different hiring manager asked me to apply and I was the only candidate. A week before the interview, HR called to a former team member who'd been removed for consistent poor performance, reassigned to the call center, and was on a performance improvement plan to apply. This same woman had a disciplinary record, including a weekend incident where she borrowed a pool car to meet 2 Tinder hookups. Wow. The role had been closed for 2 weeks, but she was told to apply anyway. I went to the interview and gave a performance equal to my first, but again didn't get the job. Both hires failed. The first woman quit within a year, having made almost no sales. Another member of her team citing her as a contributing factor after the company gave 2 of his best accounts to her to help her boost the numbers, and she tanked both. The second ended up in rehab and was quietly dismissed. A senior contact later shared that the MD had issued a hiring guideline. If the third best candidate is a diverse hire and you think they'll reach the top choices standard in 6 months, hire them. I've since moved on, haven't looked back, but it wasn't fun, to experience what amounted to gender discrimination. Right, so the first thing is, I do have progressive and liberal listeners to this that might be saying, well, you know, that has happened in reverse to women and people of colour in the past, and there's absolutely no doubt that that is true. I suppose the question is whether you rectify that by doing that in reverse, you know, it's eye for an eye, I don't know, and there might be people that say, well, you know, straight white men had a good run of it. They often say that, don't they? Straight white men had a good run of it for 2,000 years. No one alive today has been alive for 2,000 years. And I can tell you that the person that sent me this message isn't of that kind of age to have experienced that kind of privilege. I guess the reason I read that out, right, because I thought, look, I mean, Jesus Christ, the fact that the the fact that a woman actually nicked a pool card and used it for Tinder hookups is sort of funny in itself. Obviously, for John going through that at the time, it was awful. But it sort of speaks to what we were talking about earlier this week, is that a lot of companies will have gone through that process and accelerated people's progress, right? And it might have cost them money, it might have cost them sales, it might have cost them performance related issues. So this is the point. You better believe that they are looking for any moment, whether it be the election of a president or whatever the fuck Elon Musk is tweeting this week, they're looking for any moment where they can just rationalize that process, right? No, I'm not doubting that there are still inequalities. And God knows, when I do corporate gigs, most of the corporates I do, I look out, 80% of it is still a massive sausage fest, right? A massive sausage fest. That would be my book on feminism. But I just think it's worth acknowledging that in this, whenever there's a correction, there is always an overcorrection, and there are casualties in that. And anyway, listen, John, glad to hear things are going well for you. And it seems like you've dealt with it with a sense of humour. And it does feel like things maybe are starting to change. Having said all that, I do realise the irony that I have been a beneficiary of diversity, right? I somehow got myself on the diversity panel at the BBC. I was on, they got me into, after Brexit, basically part of the reason I started getting telly was because they were like, shit, we need a gammon. And now I'm on Times Radio. So yeah, I guess people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. But anyway, let's get on to talking about this week's politics. So first up, we're going to talk about the surprise U-turn of the government on an inquiry, audit, whatever you want to call it. Right, so surprise on, yes, I'm recording this Friday morning, and Thursday, Yvette Cooper stood up in the House of Commons and said that they're announcing they're going to do an audit and more focused local inquiries on the rape gangs, right? And so it's going to be an audit, not an inquiry, everybody. Shut up. It's not an inquiry. It's an audit. It's focused. It's an inquiry express, you know, like a Tesco Metro. It's an inquiry metro, you know, just popping in for a few bits. And it is weird, isn't it? Because I guess that the reason that this became an issue was because of the pressure and the visibility of things being said by Elon Musk, right? But let's also say other people had brought that to a head. I think his name's Charlie Peters at GB News, had been doing excellent journalism. And there were a whole load of other people, but Musk obviously gave it the visibility. Starmer didn't want to be seen to be being bent over a desk by Elon. So Starmer said no. So he whipped his MPs. And let's just remember what whipping your MP, why it's called whipping, right? Is you force them to do something they might not otherwise do. But then what changed, right? So what changed? I would imagine they went back to their constituencies and their constituents went, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why would there not be a national inquiry into this? It would appear like, and again, let's just be clear, there is grooming, paedophilia happening by all races across the country. The point about this is to determine the concentration of it within a particular community. And also, and it doesn't get said often enough, whether it's racially aggravated, whether it's because they're white girls, right? This is because that is an accelerant in all other sentencing court cases. If there's a racial element to it, that is usually a reason for harsher penalties and punishments and for it to be viewed even more dimly. So they went back, and if you look at the polling, there are majorities for an inquiry in every single voter category. Unsurprisingly, Reform and Tory are the highest, but also in Labour, Lib Dem. I didn't check the Greens, but I'm going to guess no. I don't know. The whole reason they're Greens is they're like, I don't know. Does anybody want some more manuka, honey? I know. Look, I'm probably being harsh to Greens. There's probably some hang 'em and flog 'em Greens. There must be, right? In every year, it's like, you remember there was, like, what was it? 4% of UKIP voters voted to remain, right? There's got to be some Greens. Are there any Greens out there that are quite right wing on law and order? Give me a shout. What most people think, uk@gmail.com. Now, at every step, this Labour Party aren't as smart as they think they are, because the optics of this are that they were playing political chess upwards, right, when they should have been looking down, i.e. at the voters, the people that vote for them. What they care about. I think that just being so petty as to not call it inquiry, I think that's poor an audit seems almost another act of disrespect to the victims. Oh, we don't know. It doesn't warrant an inquiry, this. When you think about all the things we have had inquiries for. No, this one's called an audit. What we're going to do, we're going to audit grooming gangs. What was it? Have a stock take. Fucking look at their VAT returns. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? And it doesn't sound like the scope of it is what people want to see is consequences. Who are the people? Who are the police officers, social workers, local council, and politicians who turned a blind eye or were scared to take this on that ended up with people's lives being ruined? Right? You want to see consequences. Doesn't sound like an audit really, really suggests those kind of outcomes, right? An audit is a quarterly thing, isn't it? And they're going to do it quick. They're going to do it quick. They've got Baroness Casey on the case. She's busy, isn't she? I mean, she's the one that's doing the social care review in April. Again, like, do they give a shit about social care at all? It's like, Baroness Casey, yeah, we know you're doing social care. Right, apparently she's going to do this audit, then she's straight on the social care gig. She must be a brilliant. She must be amazing at what she does. I've heard that she's pretty good. She's sort of like, it happens in comedy that there'll be somebody that will suddenly become the hot shit property. It's just getting booked on all the panel shows. Baroness Casey. She's like the political equivalent of like Rob Beckett, Romesh and Catherine all rolled into one in the inquiry world. She's just shit hot. She's going to get her own audit on Netflix soon. And again, it felt... It's just, I think, poor political management. If in the end you're going to do this, you might as well do it at the start, because it was like the Tories with things like free school meals, right? Well, we're going to stop free school meals now. Marcus Rashford kicks off, and we're like, we've changed our mind. So what it seems like is you're doing this because you didn't want to do it. You just bowed to the political pressure. And for something as serious as this, to do it because of political pressure and not because you thought it was the right thing, I think what most people would think is that reflects dimly on the government. So, yeah, this other U-turn I was talking about, it's not a U-turn, though, not in Bridget Phillipson's mind, is on the free speech legislation on campus, right? So when Labour kind of came into power, and even when they were campaigning, they were very dismissive of it. You know, it's just Tory culture war. We're going to have a politics that treads more lightly. We're not going to get involved with this stupidness. and, you know, people associated it with just these free speech guys, Can I just cite a little sidebar here? As I saw something from Toby Young yesterday, and he had tweeted about the fact that on Wikipedia, the Free Speech Union was a far-right organisation. Far-right organisation. Free Speech Union is far-right. This is what I think that progressives and the left have failed to understand for a while, is the vast majority of the public aren't tuned into the cultural discourse, right? So they would still broadly think, hey, free speech, that's good. It's good to... Let speech be free, right? Oh no, it's fine. Do you remember that period where they would call people free speech warriors and think that they were an insult? I just think that sounds like a pretty cool thing to be, a free speech warrior. Yeah, you're fighting back against censorship. What an arsehole. So it got, the free speech legislation got associated with that. And then clearly what's happened is Labour have come into power and Bridget Phillipson has basically been pressurised, probably by the department, and gone, no, there really is a fucking issue. There really is an issue. They're not booking like the kind of public speakers they should have. There's loads of people getting sacked at universities. I mean, I know just from my podcast that people join my Patreon and they ask me not to read out their names because they work at a university. And for God's sake, if you run a risk of getting in trouble because you're a fan of centre-right Uncle Jeff, then really that bespeaks a very poor culture. So, you know, just like with the audit, Labour don't want to be seen to be weak. So Bridget Phillipson has to turn it into an attack. So she says that it was right to take 6 months to create a workable system in contrast to the Conservatives' unworkable gimmickry that spoke more to them putting party interest over the national interest. Well, I would say you turning this into a party political point is also doing that, Bridget. They can't go one sentence without looking backwards, can they? That's the problem. I do think it will start wearing thin with the electorate. I even think like the Liz Truss thing. It's almost like there's a little fan club whose favourite era of Tory chaos was Liz Truss. You know, just meet up separately. Most of the public aren't thinking about Liz fucking Truss. They're thinking more about the lettuce, right? And I sort of was thinking, like, did the coalition moan this much when they come in? Because they had a pretty dismal economic inheritance as well. I remember that they set the agenda for austerity, didn't they, politically? I don't remember them moaning as much. It was weird, you know, with, like, the Rose Garden, Cameron and Clegg just, like, bumming each other up. Can you say that anymore? Bumming each other up? Anyway, they were in the Rose Garden, best new BFFs forever. And it was kind of like, we're going to fix the public finances, but this is a good thing. This is a positive thing. And the Labour Party, it's just like they cannot finish a sentence without looking backwards. I heard an interview of Rachel Reeves with Nick Robinson, and it was literally sentence one. You almost heard her stopping herself from saying 22 billion, 14 years. And, you know, these interviews with Nick Robinson are supposed to be a bit more laid back. You find out a bit more about the person. And she was very on message. So, you know, when I came in, yeah, and there was a point later. It was a good interview. It's worth listening to because Nick Robinson really basically, you know, attacks her with her own words. She said a while back that, you know, a government that overtaxes business will end up not making savings because they won't get the growth they were hoping for. And he was like, do you know who said that? That was you, that was. It was almost like, do you remember the Mary Whitehouse experience, the brilliant history guys, Newman and Baddiel? That was you, that was. That's you, that is. You're the one stifling growth. No, your mum's stifling growth. Anyway, I've gone off topic here. But the point is, I suppose what we have is a situation where the Labour Party have taken two very firm positions and been forced to backtrack on them. But I'm not, look, this podcast isn't just about hammering the Labour Party. It is quite difficult when no one gives a shit what the Tories are saying. But good news, Labour fans, is Kemi Badenoch gave a speech, I think it was yesterday or Wednesday, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. Just a quick hype here. We've got a few more patrons to announce. We've got somebody called AS. I don't know what that means. It's very hard to roast two initials. I'm guessing that you work at the most wokest university, like Goldsmiths, where I went. I think it was in my first book. Oh, what a wanker saying. I think it was in my first book. But I told the story of, like, so I was living in Mitcham at the time in a council house. And Goldsmith, you know, it's a liberal arts college. It had Tracy Emin, Damien Hirst, Blur. It's very left wing. It's very up itself. And I, do you know why I went there? I went there because it was commutable, because I wanted to carry on living in Mitcham. I was like, I don't want to move away. I like Mitcham. So I went there, and I remember there was just all these, Ponzi arty types. I sat there, they were all going around the group and they were saying, like, what A-levels they got. And they were going, yeah, I got like BBC, you know, probably where they'd end up working, you know, BCC. And they got to me, right? And they said, what A-levels did you get, Jeff? And I went, I got three A's. One of them laughed, and I'd imagine there was a couple of you that were a bit annoyed by that. I went, really? And one of these lads laughed. And Goldsmiths, I often think, you know, you talk about free speech on campus and the kind of images they want to project. I must be their most regretted alumni. I don't know if I'm at the level where I'm an alumni. I hope so. Is anyone find out? Do I appear on any Goldsmith alum? Do they acknowledge my existence? I really am not what they were. I'm not what they were hoping for. We've also got AFC 49ers. So I don't know if that's an AFC Wimbledon fan that's also lived in San Francisco, but you're very welcome to the Patreon community. Steve M. Is that because there's a group of you? I bet you come from that generation where your friendship group has about 14 Steves in and you've just had to do it by surname. Steve M, Steve D, Steve E, Steve A, the original and still the best. Sorry, mate. And then we've got Karen Donald. That's kind of weird when you have like a woman with a bloke's first name as their surname. Is that a new level of sexism where you say to your wife, okay, darling, we're getting married and your surname will be my name? I should have that at my wedding, shouldn't I? Going, I now pronounce you Emma Jeff. Just a reminder that there are work in progresses coming. I don't think they're mostly sold out now. I think there's one in Barnard Castle. There's maybe one in Middlesbrough. I think it's nearly sold out in. Yeah, look, if you want to see me putting together the next tour and saying the stuff that was probably even a bit a bit too hot to handle for the main tour, then do check out that. But the new tour announcement will be coming soon. UK tour going everywhere. England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, right? Well, Northern Ireland anyway, Belfast. So that, do look out for that. If you want to be the first to find out about that and get in on the pre-sale, go to my website, jeffnorcott.co.uk. I do have one, almost never mention it. That's the quickest way to get to my mailing list. If you scroll down, there's a mailing list button. So if you're not a patron, but you want to be kept up to date with that kind of thing, obviously patrons will go first, but mailing list, you'll be in very early on that. So go to that and give me your details. Give me your fucking details. I'll sell them to China. All right. So, you know, there's a lot going wrong with the government, but there's also the Tories haven't really recovered. If you look at a lot of the polling, some of them have them now behind reform. It's sort of an interesting point in time where there's a lot of people that might vote against the idea of more Labour government, but the idea that they're going to turn back to the Tories seems a bit far-fetched. So in this context, Kemi Badenoch is having to try to get attention. She's, you know, she's got to be seen to hold, you know, for the government are unpopular, you want to be seen to be the one holding them to account. And quite often now it seems to be the reform that are doing this. So she gave a big speech, her first one of the year and her first one for a while. I've heard a lot of journos moaning that she just doesn't give interviews. She just doesn't talk that much. So there were a couple of quotes that I wanted to pick out, which I think were interesting. She says, "I will acknowledge that the Conservative Party made mistakes," she said. And feels like the understatement of the year, doesn't it? You know, bit like Keir Starmer going, I will acknowledge that sort of seeming to suggest that any support for an inquiry into Groovy Gangs is far right may have been poor wording. But she's talking about Brexit, right? So she says, "We announced that we would leave the European Union before we had a plan for growth outside the EU. We made it law that we would deliver net zero carbon emissions by 2050, and only then did we start thinking about how we would do that. We announced that we would lower immigration, but immigration kept going up. These mistakes were made because we told people what they wanted to hear first and then tried to work it out later." Now, I don't know what you think about that, but I find that quite refreshing. But it also really does absolutely pour a whole vat of warm shit over everything that happened in the 14 years. It really, I'm going to say again, the whole 14 years, Labour have been so successful in making it feel like they were just 14 depressing years. They weren't. We had the Olympics, you know what I mean? There were good times in there, but yeah, no, Labour, this is why they keep repeating it. Even I'm starting to think, well, yeah, were we all depressed that whole time? I don't think we were, but that's certainly the impression. But yeah, there's a lot of Tory MPs, a lot of Tory politicians. You know, those old grandees that go on and kind of basically, you know, the kind of ex-Tory politicians that start slagging off the Tories, and that's when the people on the left, like James O'Brien, suddenly start having time for them. You know what? I've actually got a lot of time for Michael Heseltine since he started saying things I agree with. She also said, "What we need to start doing is looking at where we have competitive advantage with countries around the world and use our regulatory system to exploit that competitive advantage." I mean, that's the point is, you might not think that Brexit is a net benefit, but there are benefits. I mean, a good example is where the UK sits in relation to the EU in terms of AI. Now, you might think AI might be the thing that destroys us all. And it's like that scene in the first Terminator where humans are getting crushed under the foot of evil and malicious robots. But the point is, we might have a five-year boom out of it. So that was the opportunity, whether you like it or not, with Brexit, is a lower regulation. What was it called? It's Singapore on Thames, and we ended up with Brussels by the sea. That's what we've ended up with. So we sort of ended up with the worst of both worlds because, well, yeah, no, I mean, the Tories are accountable for this. They negotiated the deal, but, you know, there's still time. We can still do it. We could be the little sneaky little go-between between the EU and the US. We're geographically situated to do that. We could be the snidey little shithead playing both sides. What most people think. She spoke about some of the measures taken by Rachel Reeves. She's talked about national insurance, stuff to do with the farms. She said those options were presented to us time and time again by officials, and we had rejected them time and time again because they would hurt so many people for so little benefit. I mean, that is interesting. It is worth reminding the public that at the Treasury, they will come with suggestions. It's not the Tory party or the Labour party sitting thinking up stuff. The Tory party will say, well, we need to save money or we need to raise money. And they will come with ideas. And quite obviously, there were people in the Treasury that felt like NI, you know, winter fuel and farmers were the way to go. Let's hit the fucking farmers and the pensioners. And yeah, I suppose what she's saying has played out is that the ultimate crucible of this is, did it generate extra revenue for the government? It looks like in a lot of cases it might be a lot of pain for very little gain. I mean, that's a very difficult exercise regime to sell, isn't it? Lots of pain, no gain. You just come to our gym where you'll spend 3 hours a day and leave with injuries. She also said that Farage has had a head start. I mean, that sounds like sour grapes, doesn't it? Oh, it's too easy for him. After knocking about for 20 years plus as the leader of UKIP, the Brexit Party, and now Reform. I guess, all right, yes. What she's saying is people know who Nigel Farage is. Yeah, it is hard for her to become known other than the steak thing. I'd slag off more foods. You know, like if you just like David Baddiel sometimes uploads his fry up and but you just do that. Just become the content queen for food. Just like put a plate of lentils and just go, what a load of shit. Up your engagement. It is very hard as a leader of the opposition. Starmer had it for the first couple of years, right up till Partygate, really. No one really gave a shit what he was saying. Kemi goes on to say, I've been leading the Conservative Party for 10 weeks. Let's see where we are in a few months and a few years. Well, I don't know if people are going to give you a few years, but let's go with a few months. And then she also said, and this is the final quote I'll look at, is that she dismissed the idea of the Tories merging with Reform UK, saying Nigel Farage says he wants to destroy the Conservative Party. Why on earth would we merge with that? Good question, yeah. But there's also an answer, isn't there? I mean, you pose it as a rhetorical question. There is an answer. Why on earth would we merge with that to get back into power? Because you just love being in power. I mean, that's the simple answer. It's kind of like, it's a bit like what you said about Brexit. It's like, well, there was a thing that was politically beneficial at the time, so we might just do it and think about how that works tomorrow. So there might be a point where the Tories go, okay, I'm pretty sure this guy wants to destroy us, but if we get in bed with him, we will be back in power. We'll be back in those ministerial cars. Love those ministerial cars. I think that's one thing that we in the public, that we don't get about politics, is power and what it means. I've been in a few political environments and I've seen what it means when the force is with somebody and they sashay across a room and there's little specky spads running behind them, do you know what I mean? Dropping rose petals in front of them. It's amazing what they will sacrifice for power. So, look, I thought that there was interesting things that she said in that speech, but I think you got to look at what's the net gain of it. She'll probably lose friends in the wider Conservative community that feel that their legacy's been shat on, and it didn't even figure in the top news stories of the week. So, look, she has to do this stuff, but I don't know what she does to... I think probably she needs to be... She needs to, like, apprehend a shoplifter. That'd be... If I was part of that team, I'd go, Kemi, yeah, fuck all these lads are saying. What we need to do, right, is just go around some Tesco Expresses, right, in sort of, like, really working-class areas. There's always shoplifting there. Just hang around, wait for it, rugby tackle a shoplifter. That'd be my plan. You get this sometimes, by the way, PR ideas when you're doing the Edinburgh Fringe. When your PR has got no clue, they're like, OK, we've had a thought, think, Jeff, for you to get some coverage, and we think that you should run through down the Royal Mile naked. But that would be my view. Hang around the Tesco Express, and then the press would love it. Tough Kemi. Kemi is bad enough. Kemi badass. Yeah, that's what they'd say. OK. Kemi badass. That's the challenge, Kemi. You've got to do some badass stuff. Maybe you've got to jump out of a helicopter like Tom Cruise doing his own stunts. Listen, that is the end of this breaking news episode. We're going to be, the main show's going to be back on. It's going to come out for most people on the main feed on Wednesday. That's because Trump's inauguration is happening on the Monday. We record it on the Tuesday. Patrons, you'll get it on the Tuesday. And just a reminder, ITVX is the best show I've ever done. I'm 48. This is the first time I've been on a streaming service. Please, don't beg, Jeff. It's not decent to beg, but just, you know, just watch it, share it with your friends. And, you know, if like literally hundreds of, it's like Spotify, if hundreds of thousands of people watch this, I might get literally £26 in revenue. So I'm relying on you.